Your Honors, and may it please the Court, my name is James Bell. I represent the defendant, William Morris Harris, in this matter. Mr. Harris was tried by the jury in the Charlotte County Circuit Court. He was charged with robbery, use of a firearm to commission of a felony, and possession of a firearm after being convicted of a felony. The jury acquitted him of the robbery charge, but convicted him of the remaining two charges. The facts of the case are fairly simple. It was alleged that Mr. Harris went over to Erica Elam's house. He had his co-defendant, Derek Roberts, with him. The allegation is that Mr. Harris got out of the car, had a conversation with Miss Elam. Essentially, Roberts got out of the car with a shotgun. There were several statements that were made. I'll bring the Court's attention because I think these are the statements that the Court's going to be focusing on today that were mentioned in the briefs. At one point, Ms. Elam alleged that Mr. Harris told Roberts to shoot her in her home. At one point, it was alleged that Mr. Harris demanded that he be allowed to go into the residence to look for money, while Roberts held her at gunpoint, and then there was the argument that Harris fled.
Would you agree that instructing a criminal confederate to use a gun on a potential victim would constitute use?
That would depend on whether the Commonwealth. That would depend on whether the Commonwealth could prove all other predicate elements of robbery, and that's kind of where I was kind of trying to go with the J case. I understand the case is different. It was a bench trial. He was convicted of both of them.
And that's a pretty big distinction, given that we've consistently held you can't have inconsistent verdicts in a bench trial, but you can have them in a jury trial.
I understand that. But I think the same premise in my argument holds true in the sense that in Reed, the distinction I found, and I didn't mention it in the brief, but in Reed you had two Confederates go into a bar. Essentially, the allegation was they threatened to rob. The difference in Reed was that someone ended up dead. And while there was no murder charge, there was something else to support the use of the firearm charge. So that's the one distinction I could bring to the Court's attention. Certainly, I understand the statements of damning. I understand that to my client. But in trying to distinguish Reed from the current case, that's sort of where I am, and that is my argument to the Court.
Understood.
So to answer your question, I think my answer has to be no, or my client's in trouble. but in answering the question, no, that's my argument to the Court. Moving on to
Your candor is appreciated.
Thank you, Adam. Moving on to the use of the firearm charge. This is an interesting case because all the witnesses at trial clearly testified, that would be Elam and everyone else, that my client, Mr. Harris, never possessed the firearm. Now, I understand Mr. Roberts possessed the firearm, but the question becomes, he was standing next to him at the time. That's proximity. Is that enough? I understand there was a statement. He said to shoot into the residence, but Mr. Harris didn't shoot into the residence. Did he actually have dominion control over the firearm? And I think that's the question. Is standing next to someone and saying shoot into the residence good enough? And I argue the answer to that question is no. The other thing that's clear is that I understand Ms. Elam said he went in the house, he looked for money, and he took $50 out of my purse. But that was a clear question that did go to the jury. The jury clearly concluded in this case that Harris did not take $50 from her. That was, in order to convict him of robbery, that was what they would have had to find. So if you look at those facts, those are centralized facts I think that I needed to address the Court today. That is, I guess, my way on behalf of Mr. Harris is explaining those away and arguing that this is a case of dominion control. He didn't possess the firearm, and therefore the conviction should be overturned. And I think that's, to cut to the chase, that's the bulk of the case, and I think that's my argument to the Court. And I'll take any questions the Court has.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Uberman, it's been a long time.
Yes, Your Honor. It's good to be back. May it please the Court, David Uberman on behalf of the Commonwealth.
As the court has already noted, Virginia has long permitted inconsistent jury verdicts. And in those cases, essentially one of three things happens. Either the jury makes a mistake in the favor of the defendant, in this case it would have been acquitting him of the predicate offense, or the jury makes a mistake in favor of the Commonwealth, in this case that would have been convicting him of the compound offense, or the third option is that the jury intentionally decided to exercise some form of leniency. But in United States versus Powell, I think the court had an appropriate metaphor there and essentially held that in inconsistent jury verdicts, and certainly involve error to the extent that the jury did not follow the court's instructions, but that the court is not going to go behind that and determine whose ox has been gored, is the language that the U.S. Supreme Court used there. And Reed versus Commonwealth, which I think is a case squarely on point. In this case, there the Virginia Supreme Court held that a defendant who was acquitted of robbery in a jury trial and was also convicted of use of a firearm or the commission of that robbery, that the latter conviction can nevertheless be affirmed.
If the evidence of use is sufficient, is there any way to distinguish this case from Reed?
If the evidence of use is sufficient, no, Your Honor. I think Reed is squarely on point. And I think it's distinguishable from Jay, upon which Mr. Harris relies. In Jay, there, as the court is aware with the factual premise, essentially an undercover police officer in a sting operation was attempting to buy drugs from the defendant, who's actually named James in the consolidated case. And the defendant there insisted that the undercover cop enter his SUV, and she continued to refuse to enter the SUV. And this went on for a period of time, and eventually the additional officers that were nearby came in and arrested the defendant. When they arrested him, a gun fell out of his belt. There was no magazine in it, but the police also discovered an accomplice in the back of Mr. James's truck who was hiding under a pile of clothes. Said he was just sleeping back there, but a magazine was recovered from underneath of him that perfectly fit the defendant's gun. Now, in that case, the Supreme Court of Virginia reversed the conviction, and that was an attempt case. It's important to note that Mr. James was convicted of attempted robbery and attempted use of a firearm in an attempted robbery. And there, because James said, well, I wanted her to come into the SUV, and then I wanted to take the money from her, the Supreme Court of Virginia held, well, in this case, the facts are equally susceptible to attempted obtaining money by false pretenses, and therefore reversed on that basis. And because it was a bench trial, found as a matter of law that because they had vacated the predicate offense, that the compound offense fell with it. That's obviously distinguishable from the facts in this case, again, because there the defendant was tried by a judge, and it's worth noting that Jay did not involve inconsistent verdicts. And in fact, the Jay court expressly included a but see citation to Reed for that exact proposition. So again, I think Reed controls the disposition of this case. The facts that support the use of the firearm conviction include the fact that Harris was at the victim's residence earlier that day with his uncle Derek Roberts to purchase marijuana. He returned that evening with his cousin Alex Roberts. And when he did return, Alex Roberts, his cousin, pulled out a shotgun. Harris himself told Roberts to shoot at the house. And while Roberts held the victim at gunpoint, Harris went inside and took $50 from her home. Harris then fled in his own car. And then he lied to police after the fact and said he didn't know who his passenger was after he was apprehended. Under those facts, no rational jury would have convicted him. Harris cannot demonstrate, rather, that no rational jury would have convicted him, would not have convicted him.
A presumably rational jury acquitted him of one of the two charges.
Yes, exactly, Your Honor. Exactly. My mistake. And I think it's a very similar analysis with respect to the possession case. This is not, I won't rehash the facts again, but I will just say that this is not a mere proximity case. On brief, the Commonwealth cited the case of Coward versus Commonwealth as an example of a mere proximity case. There, the defendant was a passenger in a car at night. A police officer had either pulled over the car or had reason to approach the car, shined a flashlight into the car, and in the console area between the two seats, discovered a very small bag, what was later determined to be crack cocaine. The defendant was arrested, he was charged, he was convicted, he made no statements whatsoever, and his conviction was reversed based upon the fact that there was absolutely no evidence that he was aware of the small plastic bag that was not visible in the dark. And you contrast that with the facts of this case, where Mr. Harris is claiming he's unaware that his cousin has a 2-foot-long sawed-off shotgun. He concedes his cousin rode with him in the car for approximately 45 minutes or an hour prior to arriving at the victim's location. And again, under those circumstances, and including the fact that, again, Harris directed that the Roberts used the firearm in a case that, one, he was certainly aware of its presence, and two, he had dominion and control over it because he asked his accomplice to shoot at the house, and he also had his accomplice hold the victim at gunpoint while he robbed the house. And unless there are any additional questions, I'll rest upon the remainder of argument upon brief.
Thank you, Mr. Redman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Bell.
Very briefly, Your Honor, and thank you again for the opportunity to approach the court. In responding to, on rebuttal, I'll just try and respond to the one question you asked, Judge Russell. And I think that question was, if the evidence of use is sufficient, is there any other way to distinguish this case from Reed? And then looking at the Reed case, the only other way I can find to distinguish it is in Reed, both individuals had guns. In the present case, only Roberts had a gun, which brings back the question you initially asked me, was, is ordering Roberts to shoot the residence good enough for my client, Mr. Harris, to be convicted of use?
I remember your answer.
And I think that's where it falls, and I think that's the reasoning. So that's all I have on rebuttal. I'll take any additional questions the court has.
Thank you.
We'll come back to recounsel.